17, a cottage industry has developed around this term, Christian nationalism, especially among progressive academics. My own interest in the intersection between American identity and theology began almost 20 years ago when I started researching and writing my PhD dissertation on Christian America thesis, which was an idea espoused by many on the Christian right beginning in the 1970s, the idea that America was founded as a Christian nation. And since then, I've written books on themes of American exceptionalism, patriotism, nationalism through biography and through books on intellectual history. In all that time, I never saw the term Christian nationalism used except a couple of times in some stuffy academic books. But after Donald Trump's presidency started in 2017, Christian nationalism took off. Numerous books have appeared, especially since around 2019, that explore this phenomenon historically, theologically, sociologically, even psychologically. Yeah, there are even books that want to psychoanalyze conservatives in this regard. Most of these books tell us how Christian nationalism is racist and sexist and homophobic and exclusively right-wing and harmful and violent, even heretical. Some authors even go so far as to argue that having certain traditional views about religious freedom or marriage or the sanctity of life or biblical inerrancy makes a person a Christian nationalist. For example, if you're a Christian who understands that religious freedom means that you have the constitutional right to exercise your faith in the public square, it must follow that you are a Christian nationalist out to exclude or marginalize anyone who holds to a non-Christian religion and seeks to live out their conscience in the public square. Also, if you hold to traditional gender identities and roles and a traditional view of marriage as between a man and a woman, then you're a Christian nationalist. And furthermore, if you're a conservative, you're likely to be a Christian nationalist and thus an inherent threat to democracy. Progressive academics have written about this thing called Christian nationalism as a response to what they call the age of Trump. And as a result, a lot of conservatives are hesitant about embracing patriotism because they don't want to be tagged a nationalist and an enemy of democracy. And this is a big problem. Without proper love of country, it's not possible for this nation to cohere, predicated on the ideals and institutions that historically have identified itself to the world. Now, one of the problems with this trend of demonizing this thing called Christian nationalism is that there often occurs a conflation between the word nationalism and nationality. And that's what I want to speak to today. Nationalism refers to the tendency towards imperialism and national idolatry. Nationality refers to how citizens see themselves in relationship to God, to other nations, and to themselves. Nationality is a broad category to which the narrower terms like nationalism and patriotism pertain. So critics of Christian nationalism are often correct when they caution against making an idol of the nation, for example. We shouldn't do that. Or arbitrarily defining groups as superior or inferior. Or jingoism based on specious theological wiles. But those critics are wrong when they lump nationalists and patriots together into one group. They're wrong to think of nationality creation, which occurs organically, around real-life circumstances in time, and drawing on religious and philosophical ideas in simplistic terms of oppressed and oppressor. That's wrong. Every stage in every process of American nationality creation in history has involved some sort of civil religion, which entails symbols and rituals and liturgies that are based on texts and tradition and collective memory lived out through active expression and embraced with devotion and loyalty. The United States began its career as an independent federal republic, constitutionally based upon rule of law and liberal political, economic, and religious propositions. The founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, articulate these propositions in terms of our equality before God and our equality under the law, as well as freedom under law, and natural and prescriptive rights, and popular sovereignty. Religion, especially Christianity, has historically exerted great influence on American culture. Americans have looked to make sense of their nationality through the lens of God's providence and moral norms that are defined by the Bible since before the national founding in 1787. So while fashioning their identity, Americans have often embraced various models of nationality over time. And some of these models have carried imperialist manifestations. That's true. But not every form of American nationality is nationalistic. Nationalism entails an essentially disordered devotion to country, informed by the application of particular Christian doctrines, in which the nation comes above every other consideration. That's wrong. But patriotism, a rightly ordered love of country, is a celebration of American ideals and institutions that contribute broadly to human freedom and flourishing from the local level to the state to the national level. Patriots consider their native country in terms of the familiar. Patriots love their country as one loves his or her home. The process of creating American nationality occurs in every generation. Every American nationality gets constructed among the contours of immediate historical context and circumstances. Time goes on. This process is not new. It can't be understood as one simple and unchanging dynamic over the span of 400 years. It's multifaceted. It emerges from diverse ideologies. It changes over time. Sometimes it manifests itself in nationalistic expressions. But at other times, patriotic nationalities have emerged. The point is, since the colonial founding, Americans have participated in creating complex and contested nationalities. Americans have been divided, often bitterly so, in their visions for the nation. Represented, for example, by Loyalists versus Patriots, Hamiltonians versus Jeffersonians, Unionists against Secessionists, Assimilationists against what Theodore Roosevelt called hyphenated Americans, and Segregationists against Integrationists. In their processes of nationality creation, Americans have been perennially challenged by revolutions in technology, in communications, in religion, politics, economics, diplomacy, territorial growth, and events that they can't control beyond their shores. Still today, we find competing groups in our continuing efforts at nationality creation on the political and social and religious and economic left and right. And why should we be surprised at this? This process of national identity creation is ongoing, it's complex. It's not a simple matter of pointing the finger at those who allegedly threaten democracy. American history is a demonstration of the complexity of nationality. So in all the social media hot takes of, you know, from the left on Christian nationalism, it's really easy to miss how nuanced nationality creation has been in the American experience. The whole project of the Revolution and the Constitution was to forge a nation out of 13 distinct parts, former colonies that started calling themselves states in 1776. And that process of early Republican political cultural consolidation and territorial expansion and the organization of those newly acquired territories, not to mention diplomacy, was a process. It's a process of nationality creation. America was in the process of becoming a nation state. And so Americans steadily develop and slowly develop a national identity through various forms of political and social nationalities. And as Americans advance westward, thanks to lots of different things going on. Commercial revolution, a market revolution in the 1820s, 1830s. The America of 1844 is not the America of 1866, not the same as America in 1890, and so on and so forth. Another thing is that American nationality has always been three-dimensional. People who have developed it over the generations have cast a vision of America in space, as in the land, in time, as in how we orient ourselves to the past, the present, and the future, and in material terms as well, our natural resources, our people, people's actions, our relationship to other nations. Since the colonial period, Americans have frequently deployed nationalistic themes that carry theological weight, like a sacred land, or a pure origin story, or a millennial kingdom, or divine favor, or a sacred mission. In crafting national identity, figures like Thomas Jefferson used philosophical ideas derived from sources like the Enlightenment. Others such as Thomas Cole or John C. Calhoun employed ideas related to Romanticism. And historians like George Bancroft in the 19th century employed ideas from German idealism. The tradition of nationality creation in America is old. It's continuous. It's culturally salient. And it's very, very knotty. Great care and great thought should be employed in trying to understand it in the past and in the present. So to help give substance to this historical picture I'm trying to paint, let's consider six different nationalities that Americans have had since 1630. One, Puritan millennialism. Two, Christian republicanism. Three, manifest destiny. Four, Lincolnian unionism. Five, Wilsonian idealism. And six, Christian America. Each of these forms of American nationality bear marks of both nationalism and patriotism and can be considered accordingly. But the point of what I'm going to say here is that all these things illustrate how complex, how multifaceted American nationality creation in history has been. And to argue, in a broad sense, nationality creation and patriotism are not scary. Patriotism is a good thing. And our love for our country comes from our understanding of how these processes work. At the establishment of the New England colonies, the Puritans saw their project in terms of a covenant with God. The New England Puritans in the 17th century saw the discovery of America, the Reformation, and their colonizing project as evidence that God was bringing about his millennial kingdom in Christ right there before their very eyes. They read themselves into the biblical narrative, and they came away from reading the Bible with a view that God was working through his people to effect progress that would culminate in the breaking out of God's kingdom in North America, in New England. Between the 1630s and the 1750s, this Puritan millennialism was the predominant expression of the intersection in America between theology and nationality. As historical circumstances changed, theology continued to inform national identity, but it did so in ways unique to the changing circumstances. So by the time of the American Revolution, in the late 18th century, Americans are forming a new nation. After 1763, for example, revolutionary ideas draw their inspiration from the Bible, from English common law tradition, from classical antiquity of Greece and Rome, from the Enlightenment, and from radical Whig ideology, those liberal ideas that emerged from the English Civil War, and the Glorious Revolution in England in the 17th century. It was radical Whig ideology that brought all these different sources together into a unified whole. Historian Mark Knoll observed that colonial preaching baptized this ideology into the language of Puritan exegesis and theology that produced what he called Christian republicanism. Christian republicanism was the earliest expression of American nationality after the close of the colonial period and the beginning of our career as an independent nation. Now, this blending of biblical motifs and revolutionary ideas gave a strong sense of national purpose and strengthened the idea that God had chosen America and blessed the nation with great responsibility. So, two generations after the Revolution, a man named John L. O'Sullivan was the founding editor of a newspaper, a journal, called the United States Magazine and Democratic Review. He coined one of the most recognizable terms in American history, manifest destiny. Along with the Christian concept of providence, manifest destiny employed Christian-inspired themes of providence and innocence and mission and millennialism. And so there's a divine inevitability to American expansion. O'Sullivan's conception of manifest destiny was an important justification for the Mexican-American War, 1846 to 1848. It was important also in the Spanish-American War in 1898 and America's acquisition of overseas colonies. We see the continuation of Puritan millennialism and Christian republicanism in O'Sullivan's Manifest Destiny, but it's articulated in a brand new context. We also see O'Sullivan's racial prejudices inform his concept of nationality, in that he saw Anglo-Americans as superior to indigenous people and blacks and Mexicans. So Manifest Destiny is an example of nationalism. But in contrast to O'Sullivan's providential certainty and racial chauvinism, Abraham Lincoln's idea was patriotic. His idea of the nation was benevolent and generous and exemplary while retaining its debt to theology. Lincoln was committed to preserving the Union. By 1862, he knew that it was impossible to save the Union as it had been, as a slave republic. By 1865, the fate of the Union, what Lincoln called the last best hope of earth in 1862, rested in the hands of God. In his second inaugural address, Lincoln noted that, he said, quote, "Both sides read the same Bible, pray to the same God, and each invokes his aid against the other." But in Lincoln's view, God was judging all of America for its 250-year embrace of slavery, and Americans had to change their conception of their relationship with God. Lincoln insisted that America should not see itself as having God on its side. He thought that it was important that America should see itself on God's side. Americans should care more about that, because if they were on the side of God, then they would be on the side of right. And that national vision was confirmed in the Union victory, and it was sacralized after Lincoln's assassination, as evidenced especially in the construction in 1922 of the Lincoln Memorial, and many of you have been there to visit it. Woodrow Wilson, the 28th president of the United States, led the American war effort in World War I in 1917. He believed God had commissioned America to lead the world into Christian civilization through the defeat of the Central Powers, the establishment of the League of Nations. And Wilson's dream of this liberal order of a Christian civilization led by the United States was what animated American interventionist policies all through the 20th century. John Foster Dulles, who was Dwight Eisenhower's Secretary of State, carried out Wilson's internationalist vision. In 1955, Dulles said this, "Our people have always been endowed with a sense of mission in the world. They've believed that it was their duty to help men everywhere to get the opportunity to be and do what God designed." That sense of divine mission and solemn duty undergirded American actions from the early years of the Cold War all the way to the War on Terror in our own day. John Foster Dulles repeatedly reminded Americans that their country was a Christian nation, founded on Christian principles, the most powerful champion of civilization. And so America had a unique capacity and a solemn duty to stand for human freedom against the great foe of human freedom, the Soviet Union. If America retreated into itself, the whole world would fall to communist tyranny, according to Dulles. Now, after the tumultuous period of the 1960s and 70s, a book appeared in 1977 that launched the Christian America movement, a movement that continues to prevail in some of the most in some conservative evangelical circles today. That book was called The Light and the Glory by Peter Matt Marshall and David Manuel. It sold hundreds of thousands of copies, still in print today. They argued that America was God's new Israel. It was chosen to be the kingdom of Christ on earth. And that book served as a path forward for the nation to recover its Christian origins and its calling after having rejected its heritage with the radical student movement and second wave feminism, the disgrace of Watergate, and the military failure in Vietnam. The Christian America thesis, the idea that America was founded as a Christian nation, is based on a declension narrative. Advocates of the Christian America thesis all agreed that the nation had fallen from its glorious Christian past and must recover what had been lost. That thesis still exists today, and it seems that most of the criticism leveled at Christian nationalism has the Christian America thesis as the intended target. But even that, even the Christian America thesis, is complex because its advocates, they never can agree on what a Christian nation actually is. The thorny problem of complexity is evident when trying to hash out what would a Christian nation look like? How is it possible we were founded as a Christian nation at the beginning? But one thing we can say for sure is that nationality creation, how we have asked the question, what does it mean to be an American? That's necessarily historical. Every nationality creation period in time has oriented the nation in time, either to be oriented to the future or oriented to the past. Puritan millennialism, Christian republicanism, Manifest Destiny, Lincolnian Unionism, and Wilsonian Internationalism all looked ahead to the future. They were all progressive ideas. They were all progressive nationality creation models. The Christian America thesis is conservative because it looks backwards. It looks to the past in time, and it orients the nation in time. And when the dynamic of religion comes in to the question about how to think about American nationality, how has religion shaped the way Americans have identified themselves? To God? To other nations? To each other? Religion's very powerful. America is founded upon transcendent ideas, such as in the Declaration of Independence, when it says that all men are created equal, and that they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America is predicated, it's built on ideas that are transcendent, that are essential. They're above and beyond space and time. They apply morally and ontologically to all generations. And religion is always going to play a unique role in any discussion of American national identity. Without religion, the ideas that are necessary to the American project are totally meaningless. And so an American nationality that's devoid of Christianity, of Judeo-Christianity, and religious presuppositions, it's just inconceivable. In such a nation as the United States, founded as it was on transcendent ideas, we can count on controversy and contest in the way that Americans think and apply their ideas. And we can be certain that religion will be, just as it has been, sometimes abused and perverted to suit particular national interests, and some of those means and interests will be unjust and contradictory to the ideas expressed in the founding documents. But aberrations such as those cannot justify the jettisoning of religion in American national identity, or the jettisoning of patriotic devotion to the trust of American nationality that's been handed down to us by those that went before us. All Americans, this side of lawfulness and sanity, embrace American nationality as we recognize the nation as the normative polity in which we live and move and have our being. As long as we abide by the laws and acknowledge the supremacy of the Constitution and enjoy the blessings that America offers, as long as we appeal to American ideals and acknowledge God's name and justice in the United States, both domestically and internationally, guess what? We are subscribing to religious ideas. To throw the baby of national identity informed by religion out is to throw the bathwater of America with it. We should think carefully about American history, nationality, the intersection of religion and American identity. And we should stand against expressions that twist and debauch religion and nationality to ends that militate against American ideals that many of our forefathers and mothers gave their lives to defend and to extend. And as we do so, we may think of our loyalties along the lines of Augustine's Ordering of Loves. Augustine wrote these words in City of God: "When the miser prefers his gold to justice, it is through no fault of the gold, but of the man. And so with every created thing. For though it be good, it may be loved with an evil as well as with a good love. It is loved rightly when it is loved ordinately, evilly when inordinately." And that's where the distinction between patriotism and nationalism and nationality becomes necessary to explain clearly. To close this out, conservatives take the many nuances that are inherent in American identity seriously. Conservatives work to understand American nationality, and any critique we may advance must take precise and measured forms. Christians don't contradict themselves when they express ordered love for Christ's kingdom first, and then love for the nation, because we live in the world, and we're not of the world. Americans must recognize that we all inherit something from nationality. It's political, it could be religious, because American nationality is a gift, it is a trust, it is an inheritance that we've received from our ancestors. Most importantly, we cannot allow critics on the left who attack the simplistic idea of so-called Christian nationalism to further undermine the necessity of religion and religious people in the public square without answering them with reasonable and historical argumentation. Religion must always have a place in the public square, and patriotism as devotion to the national idea is a good thing, provided it is rightly ordered and conceived. Historical and philosophical precision are needed to pinpoint whatever kind of nationality is at hand so that we may intelligently separate the precious from the vile. Thank you, and let me pray with you. Lord, I thank you for this opportunity to reflect upon the gift of American national identity and being an American and thinking about what America entails and what America represents. Lord, as Americans and as Christians, I pray that you would help us to represent the best of Christian and American traditions faithfully. In Jesus' name we pray.